Coming off some of the worst numbers that Dynamite has done in the history of the show last week, AEW was hoping to rebound tonight with the final edition before Forbidden Door coming up this Sunday at the UBS Arena on Long Island. I just drove by the UBS Arena yesterday, and they have a digital billboard outside of the arena, and they are already promoting Forbidden Door. Had the Swerve Strickland Will Ospreay image, and it was good to see. And it reminded me that I have yet to be at the UBS Arena. I have not yet gone to a show there. Hopefully one of these days I'll make my way over there. But that will not be this weekend. This weekend I will be here watching the show and covering it live for all of you. Tonight, though, Dynamite was all about Forbidden Door. And in the main event, we had the tried and true, can they coexist, main event with Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay teaming up together on the same side, taking on the Gates of Agony. Can they coexist? A story as old as time in the wrestling business. Spoiler, no. No, they cannot. They also teased an opponent for MJF at Wembley Stadium that most people probably would tell you they did not see coming. I don't think it's actually going to happen. I think it's a red herring. I think it's to throw us off. But if it were to happen, if the match was to actually take place one-on-one, there would be a lot of very disappointed people, myself included. Just from the perspective of a marquee match on that show for someone like MJF, who was in the main event last year, defending the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, you would hope that they have something better for him. I think they do, but this will no doubt get some people talking. And Chris Jericho, the FTW champion, he got played by Murder Grandpa. And you would think there would be some kind of official announcement about whether or not we're actually going to get to see that match on Sunday. Instead, I was left confused because I don't know what's going on. Apparently, they're still promoting a trios match, even though the Learning Tree is down a man and they teased an FTW title match. I guess maybe it's not going to happen. I don't know. I'm still waiting for clarity on that. Maybe we'll get it by Saturday. We'll see. But this is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, June 26th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. We're going to talk about Dynamite here. I'm very tired, but we are going to talk about this, and we are going to also run through the card as it currently stands for Sunday show, and I will give my predictions for all of the Forbidden Door matches. We'll do that later on in the stream. That's my job. Your job is to hit that like button and subscribe. If you are not already a subscriber to this channel, I welcome you. I'm here every Wednesday talking AEW, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Tonight, it was just sort of in the middle. It was not ugly. There was good. It was not so good. Not a terribly exciting show. It was a show that served one purpose, and that purpose was to promote Forbidden Door. It was to promote AEW versus New Japan, AEW versus Stardom, AEW versus CMLL. We have a little bit of each represented on Sunday. That was the main objective tonight. To that end, they did what they had to do. At the end of the day, the people who were going to pay $50 for this show, or not, because you know there are people who will not be paying $50, but they'll find a way to watch the show anyway. Well, let's assume you're spending $50 of your hard-earned money to watch this show on Sunday. You're either an AEW diehard, or you are a big fan of these interpromotional type events. You want to see New Japan talent. You want to see CMLL talent. You want to see Stardom. Those are the fans that Forbidden Door is most appealing to. That's the audience that they're tapping into here. And that's what this show is about tonight. It was all about Sunday. To that end, I thought they did what they had to do, but kind of a middle-of-the-road show. It was not bad. It just wasn't anything terribly exciting. But let's start out with the former champion, because MJF opened the show. He came down to the ring. He did not say a whole lot before he was nearly immediately interrupted by Daniel Garcia. And they were in Buffalo tonight, which is where Garcia is from. So, of course, he got a big reaction coming out to the ring. MJF told him to tread lightly. He didn't know where this was headed. Garcia said he wanted to thank MJF for saving him next week. So apparently he is a time traveler, or he gave us a spoiler for something that's going to happen next week. He meant last week, but he said next week. I choose to believe that he's a man from the future, because that just makes this more interesting to me. He said he was out there to do something that MJF has never, or that's never been done before. He's going to say nice things about MJF. Said 9 months ago, he was sitting in the back without much to do when MJF was on TV. He was the longest reigning AEW world champion of all time, making history. But he came up to Daniel Garcia in the back and he told him that he sees him as more than just a lackey. He sees him as a pillar in AEW. And after he racked up some wins, he challenged MJF for the AEW world title. Garcia said that it ended up being one of the most, if not the most, embarrassing night of his career. But that led to him going on the run of a lifetime. And he said this, and I was a little confused. He did? He went on the run of a lifetime? What run was that? I must have missed it. I mean, he was in the Continental Classic. He got that big win at the end. I wouldn't say he had a lot of success otherwise. What is this great run that he went on? Now, I know Garcia, I think he's won 6 or 7 of his last, you know, matches that he's had. Is that the run that he's referring to? I don't know. I don't know what this great run was that he was alluding to. But in any event, now he's someone these people can believe in. And he's wondering, why settle for being a pillar when he can be the very foundation that AEW is built on? And for that, he wants to thank MJF. But even after all that, having said all of that, he said if he talks shit about Buffalo, he's going to look real two-faced and he's going to have the entire city coming after him tonight. MJF said that's not why he came out here. He came out here for two reasons. Number one, to shill his return to Long Island at Forbidden Door and his return to Collision on July 6th. Reason number two, he was going to ask Garcia to come out here, as it turned out, because he had a question for him. But first, he wanted to say thank you, and he shook his hand. He put his hand out, Garcia shook his hand. No one has ever publicly talked about all the nice things that I do behind the scenes. Talked about how a lot of people in the back are very jealous. Here he is, all successful, still in his 20s. Multi-millionaire, former world champion. He says there's a lot of jealous people in the back. Nobody in the back can beat him for his spot. But he knows somebody who's getting closer. He didn't give him a shot at the world title out of pity or because he made his name working somewhere else. And so that got him a leg up on everybody else, or he expected a handout. He gave it to him because he earned it. MJF saw a lot of himself in Garcia. Said two undersized talents from New York with chips on their shoulders. He beat Garcia all those months ago without breaking a sweat, but he noted how much better Garcia has gotten since then. MJF said that he's going to make a challenge right here and now, one-on-one. MJF against Daniel Garcia. London, England, AEW All In, Wembley Stadium. And before Garcia could give his answer, Will Ospreay made his entrance. Ospreay came to the ring with his international title. And he said he was going to offer Daniel Garcia an international title match on Dynamite next Wednesday. Because, again, there have been teases that he wants the international title. He's been eyeballing that belt. It's not like it came out of the blue. They've been teasing this now for several weeks. And then Ospreay said he would sweeten the pot even more. Not only will he put his international title on the line, but he will put his AEW World Heavyweight Championship on the line after he wins it on Sunday from Swerve Strickland. So Garcia accepted, and the announcers noted that Ospreay had just upstaged MJF, who was hanging back in the corner. He did not look very amused by this at all. And so Ospreay left, and before Garcia could answer MJF, MJF cut him off and said, look, you got to focus on that huge opportunity that's in front of you. He said, focus on that next week. And he left. MJF walked out. So it was Daniel Garcia appreciation night tonight. Had MJF coming out here singing this guy's praises. When does he do that, right? He's out there singing his praises. Will Ospreay comes out and says, oh, I'm going to give you a title shot. Not only I'm going to give you a title shot next week, I'm going to give you a shot at two titles. This was all about putting over Daniel Garcia. And look, it's never a bad thing to try to elevate younger talent on the roster. I'll say this, you know, what MJF said about him in that promo there was more effective than 1,000 squash wins for TV or for Daniel Garcia on TV. You know, having somebody like MJF, former world champion, top star in the company, not somebody known to go out there and blow smoke up your ass. He walks out there, and in his own way, he puts this kid over as like, hey, you know what? Other people get handouts around here. Other people think they're hot shit. You've earned it. I've watched you. You lost the first time, but I think you're working your way back into contention. You've really impressed me. That's how you put somebody over. He can go out there, and he can beat people, again, 10 times out of 10, in 5 seconds and tap them out. It won't get him over as much as an endorsement from somebody like MJF. It's like when MJF wrestled Kenny Omega on Collision. After that match last year, Kenny Omega, if you remember, he went on the mic. He put over MJF in the most glowing terms. He put this fucking guy over as much on the microphone as he did in the ring. That means something. You know, when you have a name like that and you are a top guy, that means something. So I like that. I thought that was good. As far as the match they are now teasing, MJF against Daniel Garcia, one-on-one at Wembley Stadium at All In, I don't think it's happening. Let me just say that first. I don't think we actually are going to get that match, at least not one-on-one, I should say. I could see a triple threat, but as far as one-on-one, I don't see it. All the signs in this segment were there that Ospreay is not going to win on Sunday, and he shouldn't. But, you know, all the signs, him coming out and being very presumptuous and saying, hey, you know, how about I put my new world championship that I haven't even won yet, I'll put that on the line against you next week as well. You'll get a shot at both my titles instead of just the one. So, you know, him coming out and saying that, MJF in the corner looking annoyed, you know, by being upstaged. They already teased last week a match between MJF and Ospreay, right? They had their stare down. So that little seed was planted for a later date where we'll get that match one-on-one. I wouldn't be surprised after what we saw here, because he cut him off at the end, if in the end, MJF rescinds the challenge because he felt he got shown up by Will Ospreay. Okay, you accepted his challenge. Well, mine had an expiration date. Maybe he takes it off the table, since that was left unresolved. Personally, what I hope out of this, I hope it leads to a heel turn for MJF. I think, you know, MJF, and this would be after Forbidden Door, obviously, but a more villainous MJF is far more appealing to me. Now, he exited through the heel tunnel. Worth noting that as well. I'm just saying. I'm just pointing that out. It doesn't mean something. Maybe. Maybe it means nothing. But he did leave through the heel tunnel when he exited. This segment may have opened with MJF and Daniel Garcia. And Daniel Garcia was, again, the focus when Will Ospreay came out. That segment was not about MJF and Daniel Garcia. That segment was not about Will Ospreay and Daniel Garcia. That segment was about MJF and Will Ospreay. That's really what that segment was about. Daniel Garcia was out there, it felt like, as a means to an end. Will it eventually end up being a situation where Daniel Garcia will be a focal point here, and they'll you know, work out a three-way match where you get all three of them in the ring at the same time on that show? It's certainly possible. I will say this, you know, for a company that gets a lot of flack for signing and pushing ex-WWE guys, and for a company, and Tony Khan obviously gets a lot of flack, and a lot of it rightfully so, for creative that is unproductive. You know, it's not productive. For as much as you could lob those criticisms at AEW, I can't sit here and criticize them for attempting, that may not work, but for trying to take a younger guy on their roster, who they've been high on for a while now, but very hot and cold with his push, which is frustrating, because when Daniel Garcia first came in and first started racking up wins on TV, what was I calling him? What was I calling him every single week? I would come on here live with all of you, we would do the Dynamite recap, and it was like a running joke, right? It was a running joke where he was main event Garcia, because he was getting main event after main event against all John Moxley and Bryan Danielson and all these different people. He was getting all this TV time. He linked up with Chris Jericho. There was a moment in time where it looked like that story was going to play out a certain way, and then it didn't. It was a swerve. And then Garcia just went right back on the back burner. I think that was a missed opportunity as well. But he's been around for so long, and yet there are these fits and starts with him where it's like it looks like they're going to push him, but then they don't, but then they do. Again, that's not productive at all, I don't think. But you know what? If they're high on this kid, and he's very talented, he's a very good wrestler, personality-wise, they've tried to, you know, enhance his personality with the dancing stuff. That's become part of his gimmick, but you know, even still, I still don't think they have been able to fully bring out of him what he may have inside. Personality-wise, charisma-wise, he's not The Rock. He's not MJF. Not everybody can be. There's still more, I think, that they could potentially pull out of him. He's not, you know, as a character, he's not there yet. As a wrestler, he's very good. If they want to push this kid, if they want to push Daniel Garcia and they think they can make a star out of him, I don't think that's such a bad thing. I think the idea, it's a nice idea. I don't know that it's going to work. But I'm not going to shit on the company because, oh my God, they're going to push Daniel Garcia? They might possibly put him in a match with MJF at Wembley Stadium? Yeah, look, that's not the match I would do either. That's not a marquee match. I would like to think they have something better and bigger lined up for MJF. But if this is the person they have said, okay, we're going to try to push this guy to that next level, or MJF, let's say, is friendly with him and says, hey, I want to help this kid out. I want to work with him. Maybe it was his idea. You know what? Great. They should do more of that. They should try to create more of those types of stars from the ground up and stick with them and push them. And don't do the start and stop thing. But if you think you have something with him, then go for it. If you want to give him a big match in front of 50,000 people at Wembley Stadium, hey, there's bigger matches you could do. But I don't think that it's a bad idea to try to get over your younger talent. I'm not going to shit on them for that. And I do think that there's a chance this turns into a three-way for the international title.
I am the learning tree.
There he is. I knew it was coming.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome. I knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when. He comes out of nowhere. Does the learning tree. We're going to be talking about the learning tree in just a little bit. Let's talk about this six-man tag. John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta representing the Blackpool Combat Club against Los Ingobernables de Japón, which was Shingo Takagi, Hiromu Takahashi, and Titan. Bryan Danielson was on commentary, scouting Shingo for the match on Sunday. They're meeting in the Owen Hart tournament. This is a fun match. Always a good night when we get to see Shingo Takagi, which we don't get to see him very often in an AEW ring. I think it's happened a couple of times before. In the end, Jon Moxley hit Hiromu with a chair to cause the disqualification, so they didn't have to pin anybody. Can't pin anybody here. I mean, think about it. Jon Moxley is the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, right? So you know he's not eating a pin. you look on the other side here, you've got Shingo Takagi, who, I mean, let's face it, he's going to lose to Bryan Danielson on Sunday. He's already going to be a loser this weekend. So, you know, I can understand them not wanting to beat L.I.J., but not even letting Yuta take a pinfall loss here. They went with the disqualification so they could protect everybody. Although I guess technically L.I.J. did get a win. It was just the DQ win. Huge brawl broke out after the match before Tetsuya Naito's music hit. The former IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And in the time that it took for Naito to make his way out through the tunnel, I went and already recorded Sunday's entire sound-off episode. It's in the can. It's sitting there. Boy, I hope there's no breaking news between now and then. It's sitting in the can waiting for Sunday. That's how long this fucking entrance took before this guy walked out. He takes his time coming out. It's Naito. So what do you expect? But there he was. He finally walked out. Moxley was so annoyed by this. He just, after a while, he's like, fuck this guy. And he leaves the ring. He charges him on the ramp. The two of them end up brawling to the back. Shingo brings Yuta into the ring. He's hitting the hammer and anvil elbows. Danielson on commentary had just made a comment about, you know, being concerned about Yuta taking any shots to the head because he just came back from a concussion. So now he sees Shingo and he's, you know, dropping those hammer and anvil elbows, and he can take no more. So Danielson leaves the announce desk, which was back up on the ramp tonight. He runs down to the ring to make the save, and the two of them had a stare down and got a really good reaction. In fact, the entire crowd burst out in yes chants at the sight of Danielson and Shingo together in the ring, which was encouraging because when L.I.J. came out for this match, it was pretty dead. As the match went on, though, people got into it, and then they were really into the stare down. That right there, that's the match I am most looking forward to on Sunday's card. Switchblade Jay White, one-on-one with Rey Fénix in a quarterfinal match in the Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. Rick Knox was annoyed by all of the extra bodies, because, you know, White came out to the ring with the members of the Bang Bang Gang, and you had Rey Fénix was out there. I think Penta was out there with Alex, and he just got tired of it. He got sick of all these people, you know, bickering and yelling at each other, and he ejected everybody. So how about that? Even a broken clock is right twice a day. A referee in Rick Knox actually doing some refereeing for a change. I never thought I would see the day. This was not the balls out kind of match you sometimes see from Rey Fénix. And that's fine. They had a good match. It ended with Jay White dropping him with Blade Runner for the win. After the match, the Patriarchy came down to the ring, led by Christian Cage, the Patriarch himself. They have expressed an interest in going after the Trios titles just recently. So they make their way down to the ring. We get a little stare down. The Patriarchy backs off. Jay White will now wrestle the winner of the match between Jeff Jarrett and the wild card entrant in the tournament, who we still do not know who this person is. They mentioned it. They did not say who it was going to be. So that's still a mystery. Speaking of the wild card, the Young Bucks were backstage. Nicholas made it clear that the Acclaimed took advantage of his hot temper last week when they beat them. But he promised that the result would be different when the titles were on the line, because in that win last week, it was an eliminator match, the Acclaimed won a future match. We don't know when, but they won a future shot at the AEW World Tag Team titles. So they have that in their back pocket. Matthew announced that the wild card, this is important, in the Owen Hart tournament would be representing the Elite. They're going to handpick the wild card entrant in the Owen Hart tournament. I wonder what Tony Khan thinks about this. I don't know. They didn't say. Apparently Tony Khan, I guess he's okay with that. He's okay with giving away a spot in this tournament, which again makes this whole thing so goofy. Because we know he's back there. You know, we know he's sitting right there. He doesn't chime in and have his own wild card. Why not have two wild cards? You have the Tony Khan wild card on one side of the bracket. You have the Elite wild card on the other side of the bracket. Wouldn't that make sense? Although I guess Tony Khan picked all the other members in the tournament, I guess, right? So they're all Tony Khan picks. I don't know. But in any event, they said that the wild card will be an elite pick. That person will go on to Wembley Stadium, win the AEW World title, and bring that championship into the Elite. They will then have total control over AEW. What man, I wonder, as I think about this, what man has history with the Elite and history with the current AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Swerve Strickland? A certain Hangman has history with both. Adam Page. Hangman Adam Page is going to be the wild card, I believe, in this tournament. Because, look, the last time we saw or heard Hangman's name mentioned on TV, he was suspended from the Elite. Remember, they fired Kenny, they suspended Hangman, so they're not on the best of terms. But it's not hard to envision a scenario where, Hangman was a heel last time we saw him. Since Swerve has won the AEW World title, we have not seen this man. But you have to imagine that when he comes back, he wants his hands on Swerve, and he wants to take that title away from Swerve because he is obsessed with Swerve. So it's not hard to imagine the Elite works out a deal with Hangman and unsuspends him with the understanding that, okay, we're going to put you in this tournament, and we're going to give you the chance to go to Wembley and get the revenge that you want and beat this man and win that title, but then you got to bring that title back into the fold. And that's the arrangement. So this doesn't change my mind about who the wild card is. I still think it's going to end up being Hangman. But the Jeff Jarrett stuff, I just want to talk about this for a second. And I talked about this on Sunday. Jeff Jarrett is going to be opposing the wild card, whoever that person turns out to be. There was a segment that aired on Collision. It was a maybe 90-second segment, but the full 9-minute unedited sit-down interview is up on their social media channels and up on their YouTube channel, and it is a tremendous piece of business. Jarrett talks about his history with Owen, being friends with him, former tag team champions with him. You know, the night he passed away and what Owen meant to him, and he cries and he gets all emotional. It's really powerful stuff. And he talks about how, you know, he had his wife passed away many years ago, his previous wife from breast cancer. And years after that, he was at his lowest point in his life. And I think he ended up in rehab, I think for alcohol. And even the person, the therapist, whoever it was, said to him, he goes, you know, you've never actually grieved Owen. Like, you've grieved your wife and maybe other people in his life, but you've never grieved Owen. And that was very cathartic for him. And you know, for the next 3 or 4 hours, he just spilled his guts and was crying and everything else. Like, he really opened himself up. And then he pivoted into a wrestling promo and talked about how nobody else in this tournament knew Owen. He's the only one. So he's going to go and he's going to win the Owen Hart Cup in honor of his former friend. It was all very touching. It was very well done, very well produced, very real emotion there. And a lot of people will oftentimes have a knee-jerk reaction, a very emotional reaction when they see something, and they'll say, oh, that's it. Like, this guy's got to win the world title. Oh, that's it. This guy's got to win the tournament. Give this guy the Royal Rumble. Come on, man. That sit-down interview was just too, it was too perfect, right? Give him the whole thing. And you got to pump the brakes and think about the bigger picture and think about the absurdity of it. If Jeff Jarrett was to go on to win the entire tournament, which then gets you a World Heavyweight Championship match at Wembley Stadium. No, of course not. Of course, Jeff Jarrett should not win the Owen Hart tournament. Don't have a problem with him taking a spot. Clearly, it means a lot to him. And they can build a story around that first round match. I don't even think he should get out of the first round, let alone win the entire thing. Those are people who saw that segment, reacted to it, you know, saw how emotional it was, and they're reacting accordingly. But you got to pump the brakes and then take a look at the big picture and say, okay, that would be ridiculous. We're not going to do that. If it's Hangman Page coming back in as a heel, then he can beat Jeff Jarrett. It'll only get him more heat. If people like Jeff and they want to see Jeff win and then he doesn't, right? More heat on the guy that beats him. That's the move for business. That's what you do. But Jarrett taking up one spot in the tournament that he clearly is going to be doing the job for whoever this person is, it's fine. I don't have an issue with that. We had the Acclaimed coming down to the ring for a rebuttal to what the Young Bucks said earlier. Max Caster is bragging in the ring about their win over the Young Cucks. Anthony Bowen said there would be no excuses when they win the titles and become two-time AEW World Tag Team Champions. They went to go scissor each other when the Bucks and Kazuchika Okada interrupted. They walked out on stage. Okada told them to scissor me, bitch. Nicholas challenged the Acclaimed to a trios match at Forbidden Door. Billy Gunn was out there with the Acclaimed. Billy Gunn, now I'm thinking, okay, wait. So we're going to get the Young Bucks and Okada against the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, which means we're going to get Okada and Billy Gunn in the ring together. I tried to visualize that in my head, and I was morbidly curious, but still not terribly interested in seeing that match. Thankfully, that's not what we're getting here. Billy Gunn said that while he would like to kick their asses, he happened to know a president, that being the president of New Japan Pro Wrestling, the ace of New Japan, Hiroshi Tanahashi, who appeared in a video up on the big screen. And Tanahashi told Okada that he was coming to fight the Elite. Scissor Ace is coming to Forbidden Door, he said. That is a much better idea than having Tanahashi go in there and challenge for the AEW World title, which is what he has done twice now on these Forbidden Door shows. Frankly, just having him in a trios match is probably the way to go over a singles match. I really wish he would get in touch with Rey Mysterio and talk to him about his hookup down in, I think it's Central America, Mexico, wherever it is. He's got the stem cell treatment. Actually, a lot of wrestlers go to Colombia. They go to Medellin. That's where I was. Beautiful city. But a lot of them go down there and they pay good money to get stem cell treatment in their knees, their neck. Kevin Nash has gone down there before. And they swear by that stuff. Let's get Tanahashi in there. Let's get let's inject millions of those fucking stem cells into the man's knees. Let's get the ace back, moving around like a normal human being and not like an 80-year-old man. It breaks my heart every time I see him walking around like that. But you know what? Father Time is undefeated. Unfortunately, that is the truth. I still like seeing Tanahashi and Okada in the ring together, so I think that should be fun. They didn't need to blow through the tag team title match on Sunday anyway. You save that for a television main event in a few weeks, right? We already have Blood and Guts coming up on the 24th next month. So sometime between now and then, they can book a Dynamite main event for the tag team titles and do the Bucks against the Acclaimed. We had Mariah May, Mina Shirakawa, and Toni Storm taking on Anna Jay, Harley Cameron, and Saraya. Mariah initially walked out with Toni Storm, and then after that, she ran right back to the backstage area and then to come out with Mina Shirakawa. So Toni got the hot tag as they came back from a commercial, hit a hip attack on Saraya before Mina tagged herself in. Mina ended up getting the win for their team. After the match was over, Mariah offered both women some champagne. Let's get some glasses of champagne. So they bring the champagne in. They all danced. Toni started dancing with Mariah. Mina now, as that's going on, Mina goes into the corner and she grabs the bottle of champagne. And now she's standing right behind Toni Storm and she's waiting. And as soon as Toni Storm turns around, she goes to bash her skull in with this champagne bottle, but Toni ducks. The problem is, she ducks, and then Mina goes to smash her. There was like a delay of a second where she moved. There was a delay, and then she went and she smashed Mariah in the head with the champagne bottle and shattered it. But the delay was so noticeable, it looked terrible. And then, of course, you had the fans in the building chanting, "You fucked up, you fucked up." So, unfortunately, that did not go off the way they had intended. Tony was furious about this. The spot, not the botch. She was very upset that Mariah got laid out by Mina. Of course, Mina and Tony are wrestling for the AEW Women's World title on Sunday. And that was the end of that. Mariah May still caught in the middle. That's been the story this entire time. And come Sunday, who is she going to side with? She's probably going to come out with both women. She'll come out with Mina first, go backstage, and then come out with Tony. And then what role will Mariah May, if any, play during the match? You know, if one of them reaches out to her for help, is she going to help them and not the other person? Or is she going to help one, and then to keep it fair, she'll have to do the same thing to the other person? I don't know. They may play games during the match. They may do some goofy stuff. We'll see. But, you know, in terms of stories that they've been telling, this is one of the longer-term stories that Tony Khan has been telling on AEW television. I've enjoyed it, and it's pretty clear to me that we're getting Tony and Mariah at Wembley Stadium. We got a video package hyping Mercedes Moné against Stephanie Vaquerre at Forbidden Door. We got footage of Monet's surprise appearance at Arena Mexico, which took place last Friday. She said that she wasn't afraid to kick the Forbidden Door down and get the title that was meant for her. And Vaquerre said that she was offended at Monet's arrogance and said that she would become the double champion on Sunday. So we cut to Mercedes in the back live here on Dynamite. She said that she went to Mexico to see Stephanie defend her title, but Stephanie was nowhere to be found tonight. She heard, though, that Vaquerre has a match on Collision against Lady Frost, and so the TBS champion will be front and center to get a bird's-eye view of that match coming up this weekend. Champagne. How many of you, show of hands in the chat, remember the Continental? The Continental skits from Saturday Night Live with Christopher Walken? The Continental. You got to look that shit up. That's where that comes from. Always laughed. Didn't matter. I don't know how many of those they did over the years, because Walken was on SNL so many times. He's like the master of Saturday Night Live. I always enjoyed those segments. Always sit down, have a nice glass of champagne. If I have one glass of champagne, that's enough for me. I'll be fucked up all night. Speaking of fucked up, it was time for the learning tree. Oh, joy. It's the learning tree, everybody. Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Brian Keith came to the ring. Brian Keith had his arm in a sling after Samoa Joe, Katsuyori Shibata, and Hook jumped them on Collision. Big Bill said that Keith was out for Forbidden Door. He's not cleared, he's injured, not able to wrestle. They no longer have their apple, their bad apple, right? Because Big Bill is the redwood, Brian Keith is the bad apple, Chris Jericho is the learning tree. They've all got their nicknames. There's a new one, by the way. There's a new one here. In the wise words, now this is what Big Bill said. Big Bill is speaking. He looks over, he points over at Chris Jericho, and he refers to him as the sensei of the sickos. Said, when one door closes, another one opens. This is what he learned. The sensei of sickos. And there are still people who are convinced that this is actually good. Maybe the sickos label is more real than we all thought. Jericho waved to the crowd and said, "Hi, guys." Said, everyone who knows him knows that he's an AEW for the young guys. Phrasing, please. That's why he brings so many of them into the Jericho Vortex, so he can help with their careers. What is this, a casting couch? I do it for the young guys, so they get sucked into my vortex. What the hell's going on here? So he referred to Samoa Joe as Samoa Joke. The joke is on you. He said they found another partner. Jericho said that he's been to Japan over 60 times, and that's a lot. And this man is one of the toughest from Japan. He said they had their own video to show, and he noted, and this is important, he noted that they are going to air this video. They have not watched the video yet. So he doesn't know what's, he thinks he knows what's on the video, but he doesn't actually know because he hasn't watched it yet. He wanted to wait and watch the video for the first time with all of his branches. He introduced this man as a fellow Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer, just like him. Here's his partner for Forbidden Door, Minoru Suzuki. Yes, Murder Grandpa pops up on screen in a video with a subtitled video message saying that he has no interest in tagging with Chris Jericho, which is news to Jericho. He wants to wrestle him. Suzuki says he hates Jericho's soft way of thinking, and he said he wants nothing to do with the Learning Tree. Smart man. He took one look at this gimmick and said, fuck no. My whole career reduced to the Learning Tree. I don't think so. Smart. Who said wrestlers were stupid? Smart. Suzuki told Jericho to put his FTW title on the line, and then he ended by saying, thank you, guys. See you soon. See, even he did the thanks, guys, at the end here. Always watch the tape before airing it. Always. Don't ever assume that you know what's on the tape. Always watch it first. It's like that time, the Seinfeld episode, where he had to go to the movies for that guy and record a bootleg video. He had to bootleg the movie. The guy was going to come by his apartment to pick it up, and they popped the tape in the machine, and there's the movie, and then all of a sudden, what the hell is this? Elaine inadvertently recorded herself. She recorded over the movie of herself dancing, looking like a dead animal, doing the Elaine dance. Always watch the tape. So Samoa Joe, Hook, and Shibata make their entrance. Joe said Jericho came to Buffalo looking for a savior and struck out again. Joe said the Learning Tree is much like the Jericho family tree in that it doesn't have enough branches. Joe said that he and his crew watched every Learning Tree segment to learn. May God have mercy on their soul. They watched every one of these stupid segments to learn everything they could about their opponents. And Joe said Shibata summed it up as well as anybody. And Shibata used his phone translator again to say, oh, brother, this guy sucks. So Jericho slapped Joe, who responded with a headbutt. Big Bill got cleared out of the ring. Then Taz and Excalibur said that Jericho and Bill still don't have a partner for Forbidden Door. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. Did we not just see Minoru Suzuki challenge Chris Jericho to an FTW title match, and yet they're still talking about this trios match? I can understand maybe the other match hasn't been made official yet, Jericho hasn't accepted, but they were still talking about it like this guy's going to have to go out and find a partner for a match that, I mean, seems like it's not happening now, but I don't know. I expected them before the night was over to put the graphic up on the screen. Tony Khan usually makes things official 5 seconds after they're mentioned. They come out of somebody's mouth. 5 seconds later, they got a fucking graphic in the corner. We didn't get a graphic, so I don't know what's going on here. Are we getting Jericho and Suzuki on Sunday or not? Or are they saving that for another date? Forbidden Door would seem to make sense to me. And I like Samoa Joe, Hook, and Shibata as a trio. Even before, like, the very first time they even started teasing something with Joe and Hook, I said, you know what, I wouldn't mind a trio with those three. And then we ended up getting it. I'm entertained by that. So, I mean, if they wrestle on Sunday, that's fine. But just very, very confusing the way they went off the air the last Dynamite before Forbidden Door with no clarity on which match is actually happening on Sunday. Is it the trios or is it the FTW title? Or is it both? Maybe they do one on the buy-in. Oh, but then Jericho has to wrestle twice. Fuck that. Fuck that. Why did I even say that? Forget that. Let's move on. That's what we need. Jericho to wrestle twice on Sunday. I don't need to see it once, let alone twice. Zack Sabre Jr., and Kyle O'Reilly. Orange Cassidy was on commentary. Roderick Strong, The Kingdom, and Gabe Kidd, the reigning New Japan Strong Champion, were watching it from the crowd. This was, as you would expect, the technical match of the night. I thought it was solid enough. Nothing terribly exciting, you know. It's a good pro wrestling match. Nothing more, nothing less. Sabre caught O'Reilly in a Fujiwara armbar for the win. After the match, Cassidy left the announce desk. He headed to the ring. Sabre held the ropes open for him, for his Forbidden Door opponent. Cassidy went to go check on O'Reilly. Sabre and Cassidy went to go face-to-face. Then Robbie Eagles and Shane Haste enter the ring to back up Sabre. And we have Excalibur on commentary explain to us that they are from Sabre's The Mighty Don't Kneel faction. Tomohiro Ishii comes out, the Stone Pitbull. He gets in the ring, and because why not? I guess, why the hell not, right? So there he is. There's Tomohiro Ishii, and he's standing with Orange Cassidy. Eagles then shoves Cassidy. Ishii is holding Cassidy back. Oh, my God. Taz said it best on commentary. Taz said, there's a lot going on here. I wrote, there's a lot going on here. Yeah, I would say so. There was too much going on here. There was so much going on here, I could just hardly give a shit, honestly. Just a bunch of bodies thrown out there. Why they all have to be there, I have no idea. It's like taking 10 pounds of shit and trying to shove it into a 5-pound bag. I don't know why we needed all these people other than just to get them FaceTime because it's Forbidden Door and maybe they'll end up doing something on the pre-show. But we don't need all of these people out here that we haven't seen up until, what, how many days is it until Sunday? 5 days? 4 or 5 days now left before the pay-per-view? Now we get Gabe Kidd and we get this guy and here's Ishii and here's this guy and here's that guy. Please. Let's get to the main event, which was Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay. Can they coexist? Can they get along for 10 minutes as they wrestled the Gates of Agony, Bishop Khan and Toa Leona? Swerve and Ospreay were already bitching at each other when Paul Turner called for the bell to start the match, okay? The match had not even begun, and they were already sniping at each other. Late in the match, Ospreay set up for a Tiger Driver 91. Hesitated, though. Thought better of it. Ospreay threw a kick at Khan, who ducked it, which led to the kick connecting with Swerve. So Ospreay accidentally knocked his partner off the apron. Swerve returned to the ring. He threw a kick that Ospreay ducked, and it ended up taking out Khan. Ospreay hit the Os Cutter on Toa Leona and covered him, but he kicked out. Even Swerve was standing there. He watched it. He counted along, and Toa Leona kicks out. Man, that Os Cutter ain't worth a shit now, is it? No, it's not. Khan returned to the ring. Swerve snapped his arm. Ospreay hit Leona with the Hidden Blade, and he pinned him. After the match was over, champion and challenger, well, I guess they're both champions, but champion and challenger went face-to-face. Ospreay asked Swerve went to go walk away. Ospreay, for the second time, he did this, was it last week or the week before? I think 2 weeks ago. Swiped the AEW world title out of his hand. So now he had his international title, he had the AEW world title. This time, though, Swerve was not going to let him get away with it. See, the last time that happened, Swerve gave him a mean look. That was a warning. Tonight, this was no warning. He kicked Ospreay from behind in the knee. Ospreay falls to his knees, and then Swerve unloaded a house call kick that sounded fucking fantastic. I mean, he, you know, you could see the magic. Yeah, you see how the magician does his trick, you know, with the thigh slap. But it's so quick. Like, when he hits that house call kick, he does it so quick, you almost don't even notice it. And the impact of it sounded like a gunshot going off. So he kicked the hell out of this guy and left Will Ospreay laying. You know what this was? Swerve had a look on his face after they zoomed in on his face. He looked so pissed off. That look that Swerve had on his face as he stood over Ospreay was the fucked around, found out. That's what that was. And he stood tall over Will Ospreay with the AEW World title to close out the show. This was your typical can they coexist tag team match that we've seen in wrestling in both companies. Probably every company. A million times before. I thought the post-match, though, was well done. This show was all about pushing Forbidden Door. And if Forbidden Door is not your thing, then this episode of Dynamite, this ain't for you. You probably will not like this show. If it is for you, though, I thought it did its job. Nothing more, nothing less. They, you know, solidified the key matches. Again, there's some confusion about parts of the card, for example. And I'm going to go through the entire card in a second. I don't recall hearing Excalibur say anything about Jeff Cobb. As far as I know, Jeff Cobb is hosting an open challenge for the New Japan television title. I don't think that was mentioned. The Jericho stuff, that's still very confusing. Are we getting the Suzuki match? Are we getting it? And the Trios match? If so, who's going to be the third man? We don't know. So there's still some confusion with some of that stuff. But again, you know, with this Forbidden Door show, you're either buying the show because you're a diehard AEW fan that would pay whatever to watch any AEW show, or you're into the Forbidden Door stuff. And there is an appeal there. There are some people who love Forbidden Door season, even though Forbidden Door season in AEW is every week. Forbidden Door season in AEW is Wednesday. It's Saturday. Sometimes Friday. So when you get that sort of thing on a regular basis, it loses some of its, you know, appeal, unless you have that one really big dream match, you know, like we had Bryan and Ospreay, for example, in Dynasty. To a lot of people, that was a dream match because, you know, two of the very best in the world today in a match that we maybe thought would never happen. And then we got to see it. So if you have a big attraction like that, that's one thing. But, you know, it's June, so it's Forbidden Door season, and you get a bunch of matches, and what do they really mean? You know, I get it. If that's just not for some people, that's understandable. But, again, these shows, building up to it, if you're not into the Forbidden Door stuff, then it's going to be rough. Now, a lot was made, and I did talk about this, and you can find the segment. I also posted it here on the channel. A lot was made of the 502,000 overall number that Dynamite did on TBS last week. It was a horrendous number. Horrendous. The worst number in the history of the show in the demo, the worst, one of the worst numbers in the history of the show, period, in 5 years of Dynamite. It was atrocious for what is supposed to be their flagship show. Now, whatever you believe the reason or the excuses may or may not have been for why the number was so dramatically low last week, the number is going to rebound this week. It's going to go back up. It's going to go back up by a good amount. How much, you know, we don't know. But I want to point one thing out for those of you who care about this kind of stuff, and I know not everybody does. The Go Home episode of Dynamite 1 year ago this week, the Go Home to Forbidden Door, pulled in 900,000 viewers. They're coming off a week where they did 500,000. I'm not expecting them to pull in 400,000 people over the span of a week at a time when their numbers are generally down. That's not going to happen. But it does illustrate the fact that the trend is down. And you could say that the trend for cable overall is down, and that may well be true. But for Dynamite, it's a troubling thing. And, you know, trying to figure out if you're Tony Khan, why don't we have as many people watching at the moment as we did 1 year ago when we were 5 days away from Forbidden Door, right? You can't say, well, it's all the people who don't like Forbidden Door. They tune out. I mean, again, 900,000 people a year ago, what are they going to pull this week? We'll find out tomorrow. But it's a problem. It's a problem that needs to be looked at if you're Tony Khan, needs to be addressed. How can we claw back some of those people? Maybe Mariah May kissing Mina Shirakawa is one of his ways that he's come up with to try to lure that audience back in. Doesn't seem to be working. But I am curious to see what the number does come in at and how it compares to what they did a year ago. And we should get our answer tomorrow because unless there's some sort of ratings delay for the holiday, Usually we get the numbers the very next day, so we will find out tomorrow. Before I get to the poll, both of them, there's one in the live chat as well. And again, hit that like button. It looks like tonight will not be a Be the Booker night, but hit that like button anyway. I want to run through this Forbidden Door card here. This is the card as of this moment. This will be updated, I'm sure, as the week goes on and we get some more clarity on certain things. But let's start here. Again, I said Jeff Cobb is going to have an open challenge based on what Jeff Cobb has said for the NJPW TV title. It's an open challenge. Who's going to accept it? I have no idea. Moxley is accounted for. Danielson is accounted for. Claudio is not. Wheeler Yuta is not. As far as the Blackpool Combat Club, I was thinking maybe Claudio. Claudio and Jeff Cobb could be a fun match. But otherwise, I don't know who accepts the challenge. Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata were supposed to wrestle the Learning Tree. Chris Jericho, Brian Keith, and Big Bill. Brian Keith is out. We don't know if the trios match is even happening now. I'm going to assume we're getting Jericho and Suzuki in place of what was going to be a trios match. And if so, Jericho is going to win. Because that's what Suzuki does when he comes in. He comes in, he does the job, he gets paid, he goes home. And people still love him, right? It's not a bad way to make a living. Although, the FTW title would be perfect on Minoru Suzuki. But we all know how protective Taz is of his intellectual property. I don't think he wants to loan that title out to Suzuki for him to take back to Japan. As Jordan Grace found out on Twitter this week, Taz is very protective of his IP, even when people are paying homage to him. Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe of Stardom take on Willow Nightingale and a Stardom mystery partner of her choosing. I have no fucking clue who that's going to be. As far as picking a winner here, I mean, I guess it depends on who Willow's partner turns out to be. You know, they're meeting in the Owen, and I feel like Statlander is going to the finals. So I am going to say Willow and her mystery partner for the win, with Statlander winning in the Owen over Nightingale. We have the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada in a trios match, taking on the Acclaimed and Hiroshi Tanahashi. I'm going to say the Bucks and Okada go over with Okada beating Tanahashi. That is my prediction there. We have Hechicero one-on-one with MJF. This is a win for MJF. You know, again, I think it'll be a very good wrestling match, but MJF's big return to Long Island against Hechicero, I mean, the fuck? It is what it is, right? At least he's on the card. Can't leave the guy off the card completely. Not exactly a marquee match, though, for MJF. His return match to pay-per-view. MJF for the win. We have Brian Danielson against Shingo Takagi. Again, this is the match I am most looking forward to on this show. Brian Danielson is going to win. He's going to advance. He's going to wrestle Pac in the next round, and it will be fantastic, as this match will be on Sunday. Very much looking forward to that, but Shingo's not going on. Orange Cassidy against Zack Sabre Jr. This should be, you know, Sabre got a win tonight. But Cassidy is pushed pretty hard, even still, by Tony Khan. I'm going to go Sabre. I'm going to go Zack Sabre Jr. on that one. Tony Storm defends the women's world title against Mina Shirakawa. That will be a win for Tony Storm. Jon Moxley defends the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against the former champion, Tetsuya Naito. This feels to me like Naito is getting the belt back. I thought it would be Shooter. They already did Moxley and Shota in May, and now it's Naito. It feels like a title change to me. You know, when Moxley first won the belt, I thought, give him a run through Forbidden Door, let him drop it there. I still feel that way. We have Mercedes Moné, the AEW TBS champion, defending her title against the New Japan Strong Women's champion, Stephanie Vicaire. Also, the CMLL Women's World Champion, that title is not on the line. The belt was conceived of, what Mercedes said on the show is a shoot. That belt was created with the idea that Mercedes would carry it first and carry it everywhere she goes. And then she got hurt in the final. She broke her ankle. That belt is going to make its way around her waist like they intended for it to a year ago. So Mercedes Moné is going to win this match. We have a ladder match to decide a brand new TNT champion because Adam Copeland did not use his best judgment. He got cocky and broke his leg and had to forfeit the TNT title. So now it sits in abeyance, and we have a ladder match that will involve Mark Briscoe, Konosuke Takeshita, Dante Martin, Leo Rush, Jack Perry, and I believe a sixth individual, which they made no mention of here on this show, but if you go to the preview on the AEW website, in the graphic, there's a sixth spot. Six men, not five. Who number six is, I don't know. I don't know if maybe they're going to keep it at five. Maybe plans have changed. It was supposed to be six. I only see five here. It doesn't matter. My pick is still the same no matter what. Jack Perry. Jack Perry is going to win the TNT title. He's the one they're trying to push right now. He's the one they set on fire, and he came back, and he got the winning fall at Anarchy in the Arena, and they want to bring more gold into the Elite. I think he's got to be the favorite going into this match, so I'm going with whoever number six is. I'm going with Jack Perry to win the title. And then in the main event, Swerve Strickland defends the AEW World Heavyweight Championship against the reigning international champion Will Ospreay. I am also very much looking forward to this match. I'm a little nervous, though, because I still think there's an outside shot that Tony Khan will do the wrong thing and do a title change here. I think that would be a mistake. It would be a mistake, and it would be an insult to Swerve Strickland for them to get the belt off of him on Sunday. It's too soon. This is his first pay-per-view main event title defense. Right here. So you're going to take the title off of him? Put the belt on Will Ospreay. When you're 2 months away from Wembley Stadium, you're going to put the belt on him for the first time in New York. On Long Island. No. No, you're not. Swerve Strickland should win. Swerve Strickland will win. He will retain the title. Now, how is he going to retain the title? Don Callis did not seem very happy about some of the comments that Ospreay made last week. It was something to the effect of him not needing him and not needing the family. And then there was a segment later in that show, after Roosh had lost to MJF, where Don Callis approached Roosh and said he had an opportunity for him. And there was no follow-up on that this week. What does that mean? Normally, I would say he's going to get involved in the match and cost MJF, but I don't even know that Roosh is allowed on the show. You know, that's why they did the match on TV instead of saving it for UBS, because of some Lucha Libre political stuff behind the scenes. My understanding is Roosh is not going to be allowed on the show. So I don't know that Roosh will be the one getting involved, but I could see Don Callis coming out and either inadvertently or otherwise causing a distraction that ultimately leads to his downfall. You've got the Tiger Driver 91 spot, which I'm sure he's at least going to tease, but then, you know, he may be too nervous to hit it. That moment of hesitation may end up coming back to bite him, and that's how Swerve gets the win. But Swerve should win. Swerve should be going into Wembley as the champion. And it feels to me, again, Hangman is probably going to be back in about a week or so, if he's going to end up being the wild card. And if so, more than Danielson, I think Hangman becomes the favorite to win the Owen, if he's in it. But that's the card right now. That is the way that Forbidden Door is shaping up. Looking over this card, I mean, it's a good card. I mean, there's a handful of matches that I would say, excited for. And then some that I just really don't care much about. Take a look at the Twitter poll here. What did you think of Dynamite before Forbidden Door? Look at this. Almost 1,500 votes in already so far. 43.7% thumbs up, 23.7% thumbs in the middle, and 32.6% thumbs down for tonight's show. Now, I'm looking at the live poll with another 500 or so votes in the chat. 60% thumbs up, 40% thumbs down. You know, that to me sounds more accurate. My opinion tends to jive with that more than the other one, but if that's what people think, you can go vote at Solomonster. You don't need me to tell you, it's always parked in the same place every single week. Yep. Yeah, Blissfan says Swerve did stand tall on the Go Home show. And normally that would worry me. I'm a little concerned, but I'm pretty confident that Ospreay is not winning that title on Sunday. Even just based on some of the things he was saying and doing in the opening segment, I don't think it's happening. I think that title is staying right where it is. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. I thank you, everybody who bombarded me with so many of your messages before. I will now get to read them. I always enjoy reading them. But we must first go back to the very beginning where Josh Carlos, 98, dropped a pair of super chats. Shout out to Josh for the combined $10. Thank you, brother. Scroll back here. Give you guys a visual aid once we catch up. But Josh says, better TV match, Omega versus Danielson, Grand Slam, or Shawn Michaels against John Cena, Raw in London? I was in it. Was I in attendance, actually? I don't remember. No, I wasn't. I wasn't. I was at Grand Slam the following year. I thought I was in attendance. Maybe I hoped I was in attendance for that match, but I wasn't. I think Cena and Michaels was the better match, actually. It was twice as long with a decisive finish, which does help it, I think, because we didn't get that in the other match. Overall, I think HBK and Cena in London. And Josh says, more likely to win a world championship or WWE title in a 5-year span. Bron Breakker or Jacob Fatu? Both men are going to be world and or WWE champion in a lot less than 5 years. So the answer is both. Now, if you're asking me who's going to win more titles in a 5-year span, I think it'll be comparable. I don't think one's going to win. They're not going to go crazy like they do with Charlotte, you know, try to pad her numbers or anything like that. They're both going to be a world champion. They're both world champion caliber performers. Pastor Cody Mitchell says, welcome back, Switchblade. We've sure missed you. It was good to see Switchblade in a singles match. Prince Vegeta says, happy 15th anniversary to one of the most underrated WWE stars of all time, Sheamus. Hopefully he gets the Grand Slam before he is done. Yes, he will. He will. I think it should be at WrestleMania, whether it's next year, the year after. That should be his WrestleMania moment. Right now, his WrestleMania moment is beating Daniel Bryan for the big gold belt in 18 seconds. As I sat there up in the media box before we moved down to the friends and family section, because we just did. Who are you? Oh, I'm related to that guy. But when the show started, I was sitting up in the media box, and there's a photo of me watching what just happened, and I can't believe what I just fucking saw. So it'll be nice for him to get another moment when he wins the Intercontinental title. Brian H. DeGreenboy. Why is Solomonster a Jericho hater? Why does he hate him so much? What did he ever do to him? There you go. Brian H. DeGreenboy with the $5 super chat. Now we play catch up with Justin Hesse with a $12 learning tree. Justin, thank you for the 12, the Juliet, with the 11. Jericho has channel-changing heat at this point. I wish Tony Khan and AEW would realize that and pull the plug on this learning tree crap and keep his ass home for months. Also, rest in peace, Sika. Yes, rest in peace to Sika. I mentioned that earlier. Josiah Ball with the $5 Super Chat. Thank you very much. David Thiering with the 12. Science experiment time. Has Solo recovered from last week's Dynamite review and all the learning trees? Or will his response be, and then he drops a learning tree? And David followed that with a $23 drop. Says, seriously, hope your drive back and day plus on the road was smooth and went off without a hitch. Mad respect and carry on, my friend. It went fine. Thank you very much, David. I posted a photo. I did pass by the new WWE headquarters. You can't miss it. I mean, it's right there. They got multiple logos up. It's staring right at you when you're on the road. You drive right past it. So I went by the building, which is noticeably bigger than the old building, I will say. As I was passing through the mean streets of Stamford. Or was I just passing through? I don't know. Oz and Glorious with the 12. This episode ruled, but the first 15 minutes was hot garbage. Everyone coming out to pretend Tony Khan's Make-A-Wish kid Disco Garcia is anything but barely above average was obnoxious. Much love, Solo. Well, they don't look at him that way. They're trying to create a new star, and I don't think it's going to work as far as creating a new main event star. Look, I can't fault them for wanting to try to put the effort in. I wish they would, you know, do that with Ricky Starks, but I think Ricky has probably, in so many words, and maybe not even with his words necessarily, but he's probably made it pretty clear, you know, what his future is, and his future is not with AEW, and it could just be they're not going to waste time investing in someone who they're not going to have in the long term, you know? And there were other reports this week about him as well and some other issues and turning down ideas. And it's just a bad situation. It sounds like a bad situation right now with him in AEW, and I don't think it's not going to work out well in the end. Benjamin Espinoza, it's mode time. That's right, that's Bree mode. Benjamin dropped a whole bunch of them on me. Jerome Eugenio, what match do you think can steal the show on the pay-per-view? For me, it's Mercedes against Stephanie. Mercedes and Stephanie are going to have a very good match. I saw their match the first time. Show stealer is hard to predict on these AEW shows because you have a lot of options usually. I can't vote against Danielson and Shingo, though, just based on the talent involved. I could say the same about Swerve and Ospreay. But I think Danielson and Shingo is the one that has the greatest potential. Arby. Work gave me tickets to the Mets game tonight, but I declined to stay home and watch Dynamite, and I am hyped for Forbidden Door. I hope everyone is doing well. May the blessings of Grimace shine upon the Mets fans. I was schooled by some of you when I asked the question the other night about Grimace. Apparently Grimace is a taste bud. I wasn't sure what he was. I wasn't sure if he was, an eggplant or some kind of vegetable or some sort of weird, you know, oddly deformed or maybe not fully formed dinosaur of some kind. I don't know. But you all told me he's a taste bud. I don't know what my taste buds look like. Because they're in my fucking mouth. Anyway. Benjamin, thank you for the 25. M. Mills, thank you for the 12. Heard from M. Mills on TNT last night as well. Benjamin with another 25. Man, Benjamin, he's like the ultimate warrior, man. He's coming out to the ring and knocking everybody over and running around like a madman here on these streams. Project Libertad. Maybe AEW would get less half-empty arenas if they stopped touring the same six northeastern American cities and Jacksonville. David Thering with the 15. If you get rid of the learning tree, I've got an idea for a replacement. A nice Solomonster rendition of Say His Name and He Appears. I believe in Joe Hendry. How about I don't replace it, and I just potentially add a new one? How about that? Since people seem to be enjoying it so much. No Cap. Forbidden Door. Time always bad anyway. Favorite Friday the 13th film. My favorite is the third film. I love it. I've said many times before I've gotten that question, and it is part three. Part three is where he got the hockey mask. There is also a ridiculous kill in that movie where he crushes someone, their head, with his hands. Remember Crush in WWF would have the head vice? He crushes this man's head, and then the... Because this was the first Friday the 13th film in 3D. So with 3D, everything's got to come out at you, right? So he squeezes this guy's head, and his eyeball pops out. So like if you were watching this in the theater back in 1982, I'm guessing is when the third one came out, maybe 82. The eye would pop out at you. It looks so ridiculous though. Alex says, do you notice a difference in pay-per-view quality between the shorter five-match WWE pay-per-view cards versus the longer AEW pay-per-view cards? It's not a difference in quality necessarily. I mean, you get a lot more wrestling and bang for your buck because you are paying money. You're not streaming it for $10. I mean, you may be streaming it for free. I know people do that. Tony Khan wants to give people their money's worth, and he just goes above and beyond and gives you more than he needs to. And a lot of these shows end up being overloaded with matches where, I mean, I remember the last show where it was Double or Nothing and we had the two main events left and it was after 11 o'clock already. And I'm like, just kill me now. That's why I pushed it off until the next day. I'll probably do it live, you know, Sunday night this time, but I may change my mind depending on how late that show goes. Ridiculous. I've enjoyed some of the WWE five-match pay-per-views just as much as the best AEW pay-per-views I've seen this year. There have been some very strong shows, and to me, whether it's five matches or 14 matches, if you put together a fun show and you space things out, you give things a chance to breathe, you focus on, you know, your key stories, and you give those matches time, because when you have fewer matches, you could give them more time. You have a lot of 20-plus minute matches on those WWE shows. You know, the problem when you have a card that, in the case of some of these AEW shows, could be 10, 11, 12 matches, and that might not even count the pre-show. You know, not everybody is going to have the time that the main event is going to have. You know, some people are going to be shortchanged. So I think you want to find that happy balance. I think for AEW, you know, you want to stick to maybe 7 or 8. And I think that's the sweet spot right there. I really do. It doesn't have to be 5. But I think you get to like in that 7 or 8 range, you're good. You got a full pay-per-view right there. Project Libertad, what even is the point of Forbidden Door? It's just AEW beats everyone they are partnered with, the show. I said we have Forbidden Door every week. But you ask, why do they still do it? They got a pretty good crowd so far. I was looking at WrestleTix the other day, and they've sold a good number of tickets at UBS for the show on Sunday. And there are a lot of AEW shows that don't do that well, you know, as well as this one is. So there's still interest in it. Esru with the 12. Sometimes I imagine you being Jerry Seinfeld's biological son and think to myself, the apple doesn't fall far from the learning tree. Where's the door? Over there. Alrighty then. Esru dropping a learning tree $12 super chat. Oh, man. The Juliet, best wishes to JR. hospitalized again for respiratory issues. He was laid up in the hospital for weeks, up until recently. He got a really bad, I think it was a virus or pneumonia. Maybe it was pneumonia. And when you're older, I mean, that could be very, very dangerous. I mean, it could be dangerous for anybody, but especially the older you get. So hopefully he'll be okay. I mean, he tweeted, he said he was on his way back to the hospital, but everything should be okay. So, you know, I'll watch the occasional clip from his podcast with him and Conrad. It'll pop up on my YouTube feed sometimes. And I think he just quit. But up until recently, he was smoking. He would be smoking during the show. At first, I saw the smoke and I'm like, ah, he's into that RVD stuff. But no, he's smoking cigarettes, which is the worst thing that you could do. It is just the nastiest habit. And it's terrible for you. And especially if you're someone who is predisposed to respiratory issues or heart disease in your family. Now, even what I have, you know, and I've talked about it before, you know, with the, you know, the blood cancer stuff. It's like, that's the first question that I was asked. And really, anytime I go in for a checkup, it's like, you're not smoking, right? You don't smoke? I go, no, I don't smoke. I've never smoked anything. It's like, okay, good, good, good. It's like the first thing they ask because it's just horrible for us. So I hope it holds that, you know, he said he was going to quit. And I hope that's the case, because if he's in and out of the hospital with respiratory problems and he's smoking cigarettes, I mean, that's like giving up. I mean, you don't want to be doing that. Oz and Glory is Bliss fan. Stephanie Vicaire is better than Alexa. Thanks, guys. There you go. David Thering with the 5. Please be honest, Solo. What are your top 3 cringiest gimmicks of all time? Can include any company that you wish. Does the learning tree make the list? Yes. Yes, it does. Especially for somebody who is considered one of the top stars in wrestling in the last 20 years. I mean, it's one thing if you have like a middle of the card person who's trying out some goofy gimmick, where they get saddled with a comedy gimmick. Somebody trying to make a name for themselves. This is somebody with a name doing this gimmick. Cringiest gimmicks? I don't know. There were times where I thought Santino was pretty cringy, and then there were times where I thought Santino was a comedic genius. There were things he did with the Cobra and everything that there were times where I'm like, man, this fucking sucks. But then you'd get something like Tea Time with Santino and Sheamus on that one UK Raw, or he'd make, you know, he'd have a segment where he's making jokes that I'm laughing out loud. I was very up and down on the Santino Morella stuff. I think cringiest, how do you not say Shockmaster? You know, how do you not say Shockmaster and falling flat on his face like that? I mean, it's still talked about to this day. But I mean, there have been terrible gimmicks. I mean, Kane in Memphis was the Christmas creature. I mean, if you want to open it up to all kinds of promotions, I'm pretty sure for a while in Puerto Rico, they were pushing the fact that, and I could be wrong, or maybe I'm getting the details wrong in some way, but playing off the murder of Bruiser Brody. And I mean, that's beyond cringy. That's just classless. I don't know if I'd call that cringy. Yeah, I mean, the list is endless. You want to go through all the ridiculous gimmicks. The zombie. Hey, Tim Arson played the zombie to the best of his ability, but it's still the fucking zombie on that first episode of ECW. We'd be here all day going through cringy gimmicks. Isaac Yankum, DDS, from Decatur, Illinois. Yes. Oh my god. TL Hopper. Barry says Sheldon Cooper for AEW Hall of Fame. If they ever make one, he should be the first inductee. Sheldon Cooper. Big Bang Theory. Andres Castillo. Always enjoy your wrestling reviews. Thank you for everything you do for the community. And wondering if I can get a birthday shout out in a Russo voice. Hey, Andres, thank you, man. Thank you for the super chat, bro. Bro, I got a birthday gift for you, bro. Because I was interviewed by Dark Side of the Ring, bro. Okay, and I normally, bro, I don't sit down for these interviews, bro, because people do not tell the truth. They do not tell the truth about Vince Russo or professional wrestling, bro. But I did this show to tell my side of the story. And I want to wish you a happy birthday, bro. There you go. There's your Vince Russo. God, my fucking skin crawls every time I even attempt to do that voice. And I'm from New York, and I know people who sound like that. Ugh. My God. Oh, my God. I can't hear that voice and not think of him. Bro. It's just wrestling, bro. Why does he talk like that, bro? Why? Why does he slow down his cadence, bro? Can you imagine him going to the store for fucking milk? And they're out of milk and he's talking to the person there. They go, excuse me, sir, what are you looking for? Bro, I am looking for a carton of milk, bro. How do you not have milk, bro? They put his fucking picture up on the wall. So that he's not welcome back into the store after that. He have to go find some other place to get milk. He wouldn't be allowed in my store. Josiah Ball. When does Tiffany Stratton become the women's champion? 2025. It's not going to happen this year. Was I always from New York? Or did I live somewhere, bro? Always from New York. Esru, when can we expect Adams in-ring return? Probably not for several more months. I don't think we see it until the fall. I think he's going to be out a full year before we get him back in the ring, Adam Cole. Bender McSimpson, love that Swerve, MJF, and Ospreay are involved in more than one angle at the same time. And Mariah May's facial expressions are great. She's fantastic. Mariah May is great. She's a beautiful woman. She's a very good wrestler. She's very entertaining, very charismatic. She's got her facial expressions down, her mannerisms, the whole character, the whole act. I remember the first time she came out dressed up as Toni Storm. It was like Toni Storm. Had me fooled. She's just been perfect, you know, since they brought her in. I guess what I'm saying is she's the perfect woman. That's what I'm saying. And if somebody was to share with her that I said that, I would not be opposed to that. I'm just saying. Uffman Entertainment, 2 wins in a row over the Yankees for our Mets. That was for Grimace. Let's go, Mets. Hey, anytime we beat the Yankees, it's a good day. Ah. You know, the air just smells fresher. The water just tastes better. Food just has more flavor to it. When the Mets beat the Yankees. Oz and Glorious with the 12. Cody's bag-carrying cheerleader, Waterboy Starks, won't be missed. Regarding Garcia, could you imagine Dean Malenko or Lash LaRue? I forgot about Lash LaRue. Or Lenny Lane. Remember Lenny Lane? Lash LaRue getting a 15-minute opening WCW Nitro segment with Hollywood Hogan. Well, you know, hey, Hogan worked a program there towards the end with Billy Kidman, so anything's possible. I think they were paying him $675,000 per pay-per-view match at that point, and he wrestled Billy Kidman on a show. Rojo Bear, nothing can kill the Grimace. I think COVID killed a lot of people's grimaces, right? A lot of people lost their sense of taste and smell. I think COVID killed it. Thankfully, I didn't lose my sense of taste. That would have been horrible. That would have been terrible. But I know a lot of people who, for like weeks or months, couldn't taste, couldn't smell. There was a fire at home, you know, the gas is on or something. They couldn't smell it. It's dangerous, you know? Prince Vegeta, the Snowman's three biggest wasted could be main eventers, Wardlow, Malakai Black, and Ricky Starks. Well, Wardlow is at the top of that list for sure. Malakai could have and should have been bigger than he presently is. And Ricky Starks is going to end up in NXT. That's my prediction. Devin from New Jersey. My colleague says Connecticut is the worst state to drive in. Does Solo agree? Connecticut is very bad, but I live in New York. So I vote for New York. Yeah, I was driving home earlier. And a lot of trucks on the road when you're driving through Connecticut or you're driving home from Connecticut. And it's always very unnerving. You know, these two giant tractor trailers are just like they box you into the middle lane or something. It just makes me very nervous. But, you know, I'm driving and there's always this one idiot who's in a rush to get somewhere, who's in a rush to go absolutely nowhere, if we're being honest. I'm always looking, going, where are you going that you need to be driving 70 miles an hour, weaving in and out of lanes? So I could see him, and I'm in the left lane, and there's a truck that is behind me, but in the lane next to me. And then this guy in a black car, I don't know what car it was. Might have been a Hyundai, but I could see. I'm like, he's gonna cut me off. He almost caused a huge accident by ramming into me. And there was another car as well because he wanted to cut in front of me. And I wasn't going to let him. So he stopped. We all jammed our brakes. I mean, it was this close from catastrophe because this motherfucker was in such a rush that he had to get in front. I guess I wasn't going fast enough for. I was going like 68. I guess that wasn't fast enough. I was going 68 and a 50. I guess that wasn't fast enough for him. And I'm like, you motherfucker, where the fuck are you going? Now he had to sit behind me. I'm like, now you're going to sit behind me. I slowed to 45. Fuck you. So then I watched him. You know, he goes around me. And then he goes around the truck. And I'm watching as he goes down. And he's weaving in and out, in and out. And I'm like, either he has to take a shit or he's just an asshole. Because there's no reason to be driving like that on the road. Like, people like that, they always, they're incredibly obnoxious. Because you know they have absolutely no place to go. They just have no patience. And then they'll end up killing somebody for no reason at all. So, yeah, when he ended up behind me, I said, I'm going to slow down here. I'm in the left lane, and I slowed down to like 40 miles an hour. Probably had everybody behind me going, what the fuck? Fuck you. Fuck you. That's what I say. So, yeah, Connecticut is pretty bad, but New York is not much better. I just feel like traffic is just probably horrible all over. Like, there's so many more people now. These roads were not designed for this many people. That's why traffic is so bad. There's more cars. They have no place to go. That then leads to more road. I was going to say roid rage. That too. But that then leads to more road rage. Simple as that. Arabian Night 2000. You think five matches for a WWE PLE is too few. Even Sami Zayn in an interview said he was indifferent to it. Seven is the sweet spot, in my opinion. Give talent a shot on a PLE. I would much rather they keep it focused to the key people who were featured on TV leading up to that event. If that means five matches, then I'm okay with five matches. As long as you give me five of the best matches that you can give me, and I'm entertained when that show is over. And that includes entrances, that includes any other segments on the show, and of course, the matches themselves. I'm not hung up so much on the number. You know, could they add a sixth match? Sure. But that's just the way Triple H does things, you know? He runs a tighter ship when it comes to these events. It comes from his time booking in NXT. It worked for him there. He figures it'll work for him on the main roster. So far, he's been proven right. Because these shows keep setting records left and right. David Thiering with the $5 super chat. I, too, battled cancer in my life. Was a different kind than yours. I have been cancer-free since 2014. Cancer sucks. Well, I'm very happy to hear that you are cancer-free, David. And may you stay that way. And yes, cancer does suck. I lost my mom to cancer. The Winston Slip. Which Dark Side of the Ring season did you like the most? I don't really know what episodes even correspond to which season anymore. I enjoyed the last season. I don't know if it was the best. I think the season that had the Owen Hart episode, I don't know if that was the second one or the third one. I think the second one maybe had the Benoit, and then the third had Owen. I don't remember offhand. I don't know what episodes correspond to what season, so I don't know. Retro KOH, come drive motorbikes in Vietnam. You will pray for New York or Connecticut traffic real quick. Well, you know, I will say this. When I was in Costa Rica, and I went to Costa Rica many years ago with friends, and one of the scariest experiences on the road was in Costa Rica, because down there, and it might be like this in a lot of the Central American and South American countries, I don't know. But there, They have their own kind of rules for driving. And I just remember, I think I've mentioned this, coming to a traffic circle, and we were driving a manual transmission vehicle. Had not done that before. My friend was doing the driving, not me. And so the car multiple times as we would be driving would stall out. You know, would shut off. You'd have to turn it back on. You could be in the middle of driving and this happened. Well, the worst possible time for that to happen is when you're at a traffic circle and you're waiting for your moment, because they don't slow down for you. So you're waiting for your moment to just kind of jet out into the traffic, and there's like a bus coming. And with the manual transmission, the car, as we went to go, the car went off. It was like, uh-oh, this is not good. We narrowly avoided catastrophe there. And then the same thing happened. We went to three different cities, actually. It was San Jose, Arenal, which has an active volcano, and Monteverde. And Monteverde is where we were literally driving up the side of a mountain. And there ain't no railings or anything. You're driving up the side of a mountain here. And it's a steep hill that we have come upon. And the same thing happened. Like, we were almost to the top of the hill, and the car stalled out. Now, I look. I'm in the back seat, so I'm at the mercy of the driver. I look behind us, and at the bottom of the hill, there's another car that's coming. And we start slowly rolling backwards. Yeah, you haven't lived until you're sitting in the back of a car rolling down the side of a hill. So, it could always be worse. Pura vida. There you go. That's right. See, I learned those two words when I was in Costa Rica. Pura vida. I ate, what did I eat? Arroz con pollo. I ate that every night. I just refused to eat anything else because I was afraid I was going to eat something that was going to make me sick. Because it would have like cheese or cream. They'd like sneak it in there and I wouldn't know. So I'm like, I can't. I don't care where we go. We'll hit up all the local family-run places. I'm gonna have arroz con pollo, chicken and rice every night. They're like, don't you get tired of that? I go, nope. It's safe. It's delicious. Leave me alone. As long as I have my arroz con pollo, I'm a happy man. Prince Vegeta. Have you ever played any Resident Evil games? The original Resident Evil 4 is one of my all-time favorite games. I did. I played the first two. And the reason I stopped after the second one, there is a scene in the Resident Evil game, and I'm pretty sure it was the second one, where you come to a hallway and the music stops. And I'm like, well, that's not good. Why did the music stop? And then a dog jumps through the window, that crashes through the window, and I scream like a girl, and I vow never to play this game again. And I never did. That was the end of my Resident Evil experience. It scarred me enough. I just wasn't expecting it. And that was it for me. So, since Resident Evil 2, I have not played Resident Evil. That would make for a very interesting sound of gamer if I didn't think that game would short-circuit my laptop here. Barry MK, a homeless man, ran past me. Where could he possibly be going? It's a quote from Cat Williams. It's true. Why would he be in such a rush? It doesn't make any sense. Devin from New Jersey, he was probably in a rush to watch the stream. Well, I mean, if that were the case, I could at least understand that. But there ain't going to be a stream if you run me off the road and kill me. So it's kind of a self-defeating thing, you know? Justin G. Sorry I'm late. Plans change, pal. Have my like. I will have. I will steal your like. Austin says that is an iconic Resident Evil moment. Yeah. Iconic, all right. I'll never forget it. As long as I live, I'll never forget it. Cujo, yeah, that's what the dog looked like to me. Cujo the dog. Oofman Entertainment with the 1992. Thank you, my fellow Mets man. Speaking of Russo, according to Vice, in the 4 hours of interview time, Russo said bro 353 times. If one does that Steiner math, he said bro approximately 1.47 times a minute. Bro. He can't help himself. He's incapable of stopping himself. I've never seen anything like it. He could be talking to a woman. He would still call her bro. If he had a sister, and maybe he does, I don't know. I don't give a shit. But if he does, he probably calls her bro too. He probably calls his parents bro. His wife, his kids, bro, bro, bro. I can picture him like on his wedding day when they're exchanging their vows, right? In this lovely ceremony, and you know, he's gazing down at his wife's face and reciting his vows and saying bro after every vow. Instead of saying I do every time, like the minister or whatever, right? You have to say I do. I bro. And do you, Vince, take your lawfully wedded wife here in sickness and in health as long as you both shall live? I bro. He can create his own fucking phone. Instead of the iPhone, it's the iBro. I mean, the possibilities here are endless. The Winston Slip. Traffic is why my favorite video game is Twisted Metal. Well, that's an oldie. Justin G. Scary at first was armed DUI checkpoints in Italy. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a fun experience. Will you be my bro? No, I will not be your bro. Justin G, GameCube, Eternal Darkness, do it. Nah, I don't have a GameCube. And Josiah, thank you for the $2. Thank you, guys. Oh, man. You guys are too much. You guys are too much. Well, we are sitting at 399 likes, so I guess we fell one short. I'm going to be with you live on Friday night. That's going to be a big night. I think SmackDown's going to be a big show this week. They're at Madison Square Garden, and we will have the first official SmackDown, full SmackDown with Jacob Fatu as part of the new bloodline. And so we shall see what happens when Jacob Fatu comes to MSG. He's already making his MSG debut. How about that? I'm going to be here as soon as the show goes off the air, so be sure to tune in live on Friday night. And we are now sitting at 409 likes. Just crossed the finish line, did we? Little late tonight, aren't we? Well, all right, you guys came in the end, so there we go. It's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
You got a buzzer beater. So let's go ahead and be the booker. And we're going to kick things off here with two men who, when they were paired off in Impact, and this would have been 2012 or 2013, I want to say 2013. I was a big fan of this pairing. This is the Dirty Heels. Back when I actually was watching Impact on a weekly basis. I'd fallen out of it years earlier. I got back into it around the time that, might have been around the time that Beer Money split up. And then Bubba Ray was Bully Ray. Got the Dirty Heels. Going to be stepping into the ring with LAX, Santana, and Ortiz. Also, a lot of history there in TNA for Santana and Ortiz against the Dirty Heels. Hell of a match. Hell of a match. That's a great match to start us out here. We're off to a great start. I like it. All right, here we go. Ladies, be the booker. Oh, look who it is. Arrgh! Arrgh! It's Angry Beth Phoenix. God, I remember how awkward that moment was. It was just... We got I wouldn't want to be standing across the ring from Angry Beth. Someone's going to have to, though. Let's see who it is. Angry Beth Phoenix against Nikki Bella. That don't work for me, brother. All right, here we go. Men's Be the Booker, main event time. This is what it all comes down to here. We begin, oh my goodness, look at this. It's Bobby Roode for the second time tonight. This time as the TNA Heavyweight Champion. We got Bobby Roode twice. And not even glorious Bobby Roode. We got TNA Bobby Roode. Twice in the same night. He appears in tag team and main event, Be the Booker. Bobby Roode, now he's one of the biggest backstage producers they have there. Bobby Roode, one-on-one with Rowdy Roddy Piper. That is a banger. Bobby Roode and Roddy Piper. It's a banger to me. 2 out of 3. Not a perfect night. Our streak is over, by the way. I just realized our streak has ended. Didn't we go like 4 straight Be the Bookers of Clean Sweep? Came to an end tonight. I hear Batman is roaming the city tonight. Let's find out. I'll see you guys on Friday night. I gotta get sleep. You guys are too much.